This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad you're with me on this Monday afternoon, and we'll talk a lot of sports with you. We're going to start out talking with Dean Look, former Michigan State All-American and an NFL official referee for a long, long time. And I sort of want to talk a little bit with Dean on how officiating has changed over the years. We know that the game isn't the rough and tumble game that I knew back in the 60s, in the early 70s. So it's changed a lot since then. But let's talk with Dean Look and get his take on it. Dean, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, great, Earl. How are you? Good afternoon, by the way.
Hey, good afternoon to you, too. Yeah, the game has really changed a lot over the years, hasn't it?
Well, it has. It's gotten faster. The players have gotten bigger. Fortunately, the field stayed the same. It's still only 100 yards, Earl.
Yes, it is. Sometimes I wonder if that's good or bad. I mean, you look at the Canadian field, I know that's a different game, but it's a bigger field, a wider field, and maybe that makes just for more space and more room for plays and do things. I know we don't often compare it to Canadian football, but how would you say it when you look at how the Canadian game is played and it's more wide open up there and here it's becoming more wide open. So that's an interesting dynamic.
Well, it certainly is. And one of the things about Canadian football, or Canadian professional football, is that they can go in motion. You can have one of your backs be going towards the line of scrimmage at full speed when the ball is snapped, as long as he doesn't cross that plane. And that's always been an interesting thing to me when I'd watch a Canadian game. Here comes a guy, full tilt. And when you got good timing, you snap the ball, and he's on his way downfield. And you get a Bob Hayes that's at the line of scrimmage going to run a 9-300. You can just take two steps back and throw it up in the air, and he's going to catch it.
Yes. Do you think that's an advantage just to have the bigger field? I mean, it's more wide open. I mean, and they have more room in the end zones. I've always liked that, more room in the end zones where they may have to make a catch or make a play. I've always been more interested in that wider field.
Well, that's always a point of interest, especially for the receivers, because it gives them a lot more room to make the out cut and for the quarterbacks to throw the ball. Harder for the defense to cover them because you got more space.
Yes. Now, when we talk about with American football here and the way the rules have changed, I mean, I remember when you after the quarterback threw the ball, you still had two or three or four steps, you could still pop the quarterback. You can't do that now. You barely get a step and a half or two steps, and that's been one big road change. What are some of the other changes that have, they've tried to make a more of a nicer game?
Well, that's an interesting term, Earl. It's a nicer game as far as we've eliminated any of the hits to heads.
Yes,
into the helmet. It's just it's all gone, and yeah. I mean, it still happens, but it's a penalty. But they've really legislated that out of the game in professional football.
And that's good.
We did have a number of injuries because of it. Guys going head to head on, especially with defenseless pass receivers. That's another issue that we're really legislating out of the game. As well as if a receiver is up in the air, you absolutely can't. You can't hit him in the head at all. And now, even if he comes back down to the ground, you can't hit him in the head. He's to tackle him high. He's got to be a player. He's got to have both feet down, have the ball, and be able to defend himself.
And that's been a plus. I mean, eliminating all the hits, because with all the concussions that have come up now and the issue of concussions, I think really that's one of the best rules ever to so players don't hit other players in the head, or they avoid it. And I think that's good for the game, even though I know some players don't like it, but still, it's overall, it's good for the game.
You know, Earl, there's no matter what you do, there's always going to be some players that don't like it. But the issue is the player safety.
Yes.
And it's absolutely a player safety factor, not hitting somebody in the helmet. Now, I haven't heard the statistics yet, but I'll be very interested in when they come up to the owners' meeting about the issue of kicking off from the 35-yard line instead of the 30-yard line, which gives team more of a chance for a touchback rather than a return of the kickoff. And that's going to be an interesting stat when we bring that out. And I also noticed over the course of the year that we had very few long run backs.
Yes.
Most of the runners were tackled inside of the 20-yard line, where when kicking off from the 30, they were running from, close to the average, go close to the 25-yard line.
Very interesting. Well, let's go. We got a caller on the line. Let's go out to Grand Ledge, talk with Kirk. Kirk, how you doing?
Hi, Earl. Hey,
Hi.
Dean.
Hi, Kirk.
Hey, Dean, I hear what you're saying about the blows to the head and stuff, but when I watch a game, I think there's plenty of blows to the head that happen, but they're delivered by offensive players that don't get flagged for penalties. It's what's been legislated out of the game has been defensive players using their helmets. I'm interested in that. But the other thing I wanted to bring up was the role of instant replay. Now, I don't think there's been any study on it in the NFL, but I read recently there was a study on it in the college game that since the advent of instant replay in the college football game, home field advantage has shrunk. It's down to like 52% or something like that home teams win, where before it was, like in the 70s or something like that. And I was just wondering what your thoughts or opinions were on that. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's interesting that you should bring up the issue of the offense using their helmets going head-to-head.
Yes.
You can go helmet-to-helmet. If I'm an offensive player and I'm blocking, I can go helmet-to-helmet. The issue is on the runner and the quarterback. Other than that, there's very few injuries with offensive linemen, with backs blocking, and mainly it's the receivers and the runners getting tackled and by a blow to the helmet. The other question?
Oh, instant replay.
The replay. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. College is much different than NFL and replay. Colleges have replay of every play. They got a guy they have two fellows looking at the play, and every play there's a possibility of a replay. Whereas in the NFL, outside of the 2 minutes of the second and the fourth quarter, the replay has to be challenged by a coach. So even though the spectators see a play that may have been reviewed and changed, it's the decision of the coach to do that. If he's going to lose a timeout, or if he gets a reversal, is it worth losing the replay?
Hey, Dean, now, when you look at the college game and the pro game, is the college game now maybe more difficult than the pro game? And the pro game, since they're making so many moves to safety, is that maybe a more safer game than the college game, or is it still the college is a more safer game?
Oh, I think the college is a safer game, Earl. As if you look at the skill level of college, it's good. But you don't have the elite teams and the elite players like they do in professional football. Professional football is comprised of the elite players in college football. You're going to have, like, Michigan State's got some elite players, and the Big Ten have some elite players. But you don't have, like, eight or nine of them on the same team. And I think over the long term, when statistics come out, that the pros – then we definitely have to legislate against some of the issues that were happening, because we're getting guys that were hit hunting. When you got a guy back there standing 20 yards and he's coming full tilt and a guy gets spun around and he lets him have it in the helmet, that's a real serious blow. I'm not saying that the colleges don't have that, but they have a lot less of it.
Yep. Okay, we got another caller for you. We got Don from DeWitt. Don, how you doing?
Hey, real good, Earl. Thanks for the opportunity. Hi, Dean. Due to your position, you've obviously had an almost unique perspective and chance to view a lot of great, great football players and teams. If you could, while I understand you're wrapped up in doing your job and totally impartial, you know, having that up close look, you've had to have developed some favorite players, maybe through the years. I mean, just who are some of the players that amazed you the most, and who are some players maybe through quirky things or whatever, left an impression on you? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Sure, that's a good question, Don. Over the years, there have been some great players, great teams, great games, and to pick out one or two would be most difficult to talk about. But there have been. I'll tell you one story that was really interesting and fun and developed a great relationship was when Bob Greasy was playing with the Dolphins. And we had a game with Miami, and we called there's a foul in the NFL. It's called head bob by the quarterback, which he stands up and he starts calling signals and he starts jerking his head down. And if the defense comes across, it's a foul on the quarterback. It's called head bob. Well, after the game, there was a foul called on Greasy during the game. And penalized them, and then I thought that was kind of funny. We got a head bob on Bob, and so after the game, I was talking to my friend over in Marco Arnold, and while I was talking to him, Greasy called him because he was a good friend of his also, and I had just told this fellow's name was Jim Stackpo. I just told Jimmy that about that head bob on Bob Greasy. And so when he picked up the phone to talk to Greasy, he said, "Is this head Bob Greasy?" And Greasy, you know, all of a sudden he's on speakerphone, and all of a sudden he says, "Is that Dean Look there?" And there we went. And that was kind of for the next 30 years, that's been kind of the greeting that we had back and forth.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Head Bob Greasy.
Yep. Hey, I know you still follow your team, Michigan State, and follow them. How did you, as a fan from afar, view Michigan State's season this year?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. I think Mark has done just a magnificent job in his coaching staff and have gotten the right players in the right position. With the right attitude and a team attitude, which has just been great. I don't see the games here, but I watch them on TV, and it's really exciting just to watch them play. They're a tough team. They've got a good offense, got some kids that can throw it and catch it. I think our quarterback was just absolutely outstanding as a quarterback and also as a person. And we've got some real gentlemen on that football team, and we got some real strong players. And it all comes down from the top down. And when you got a strong coaching staff, it goes right on down to the players, and they certainly have done a great job.
Yes, they have. Hey, Dean, always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll talk during the season, we'll talk after the season, but we'll talk to you some more later on, buddy.
Okay. Talk to you later, Earl. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Dean Look, a former Michigan State All-American and former longtime NFL referee. He's basically a retired NFL referee, and he just goes around now observing how referees perform their duties during NFL games. But he's always done a great, great job as an NFL referee. The time, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
Iran threatens to close the oil lifeline through the Strait of Hormuz. Sanctions bite ever deeper. There's open talk of a strike against Iran's nuclear facilities, and Israeli and Iranian agents engage in a deadly shadow war. I'm Neil Cunningham, NPR's Mike Schuster, on what Iran wants, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. This is Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. The high today, 39 and mostly sunny. Tonight, a windy night, mostly cloudy, with a low in the upper 20s. Tomorrow, rain and snow are likely. Breezy with a high in the low 40s. Staying in the low 40s for a high Wednesday. Partly sunny with a slight chance of rain and snow.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Now we're going to talk with MSU assistant basketball coach Dane Fife. And Dane, how you doing, buddy? And I got to tell you, I was really impressed. What a game yesterday. That was especially the second half. After, you know, that first half was back and forth. But then you really locked them down the second half.
Well, I think that's a good point, Earl. I think the main thing going into halftime was we're down three. We didn't play particularly well. We didn't shoot. Let's put it this way. We didn't feel like we took great shots. So we thought the main issue would be to continue to work, wearing them down. Obviously, they were thin with regard to their roster. So we wanted to continue to work and wear them down. I think we eventually did. They shot very poorly. That was due in part to pretty good defense, but also I think we just wore them down.
Yeah, you know, we just had our presser with Tom at lunch today. Let me get your opinion. How do you think that Michigan State is doing? I think they're doing pretty well on the defensive end against teams, you know, when they're playing on the road. How do you think they are, the road teams? Because it seems like, you know, this year has been one of these years where just about every team struggles on the road, except Michigan State's been winning some close on the road and some by a larger margin. What is your key to that success on the road?
Well, I think we're doing a relatively good job of taking care of the basketball. That would be the biggest part. From my standpoint, is are we taking care of the basketball? Then obviously a Michigan State staple is rebounding. We've got to continue to do that. One thing we're doing a better job of this year, we didn't do it particularly well in the Purdue game, but especially in the first half, we're guarding the three-point line. I think that's crucial. You know, we want to keep the energy plays out of the game, such as a tip dunk or a breakout dunk off a turnover, dunk off of an offensive rebound. And then a three-point shot is always a good energy play. So we want to limit the energy plays to keep the team, our opponent, out of it and keep the opposing crowd out of it, which obviously plays a huge role.
Now, I knew coming in the rematch with Purdue that Robbie Hummel wasn't having a baddest game as he had here when he was 0-for-11. He shot a lot better. How much do you give credit just for the other player having their will and just performing above and beyond on their home court and just over the opponent because they just want to win so bad?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point. Robbie's a really good player. He's fifth year in the Big Ten. He's a senior, you know, much like Draymond and Austin. I always believe that, you know, when you put in that much work, seniors typically have a pretty special year. And we expected that. We expected Robbie to certainly play better there than he did at our place. Had a lot of energy in the first half. I just think a big part was we threw Draymond at him, we threw Austin at him, we'd have Knicks guarding him sometimes, we had Ghana. We had fresh bodies in on Robbie at all times, and he had to play 40 minutes or very close to it. So I think we eventually just wore him down.
Yeah, guys like him and Draymond, you know, special players, and they always seem to rise to the occasion, you know, fourth-year players. There's something to be said. I know we don't talk a lot about fourth-year players, but guys who stay all 4 years, that really helps the school, helps the team, and it does so much for the team and for the community and everything else. When you get a fourth-year player or really a good one, they sort of drag everybody else along, don't they?
I think that's a big part of it. Dede's been through many, many, many wars, as has Thornton. And it's always great to be able to have those guys, those types of guys in your program. And, you know, in years past, there'd be three, four, five, I'd assume, back, you know, before the all the kids started leaving for the pros early. So they're almost a rarity to have, like you said, a legitimate four-year player that has had an impact like Draymond or even a Mateen Cleaves, and obviously a Thornton, not even a Mateen Cleaves, but you think back when Mateen had a chance to leave early and stayed the impact that he had. So four-year guys are invaluable, and we're very fortunate to have two that have just been absolutely outstanding for us to this point.
Yes, and I know you had a chance to watch one and go against one. John Scherner is really another one of those four-year guys who's really done a great job for Northwestern. I know we don't get a chance to talk about a guy like that because he's not in our area, but, boy, you talk about a good player. Scherner has really become a very good player. He might even make it to the NBA.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about that the other day with an NBA scout. He certainly has pro potential, no question. He's 6'7", 6'8". Can do many different things offensively. He can post, and then he can step out, really shoot, play a guard position. And can't help but feel for the guy and hope that he makes the NCAA tournament in his last go-around. Lord knows he's certainly deserving of it. Done a really good job of leading his team in all aspects, and he's fun to watch. You know, I can imagine the opponents like to watch Draymond and Austin as we would like to watch John Scherner, as long as he's not scoring 25 on us and beating us. So he's been a pleasure to watch, that's for sure. And being a Big Ten guy, we're certainly happy to have him in the Big Ten and be a part of this special conference.
Hey, Dane, now, there's one team that, you know, a lot of us have talked about and heard other broadcasters talking about, and that's Illinois. A lot of people and announcers saying Illinois, they have too many players that are looking ahead to the next year instead of concentrating on this year, and maybe that's why they're having so much trouble. What do you see as Illinois, their problem? Do you think too many of them are looking ahead thinking that they have pro careers? You and I know really they probably don't have that many, but you know how guys think, a lot of them probably do think they've got a pro career.
Well, I really can't speak to that. I don't spend time, and I've always said I think it's important. It's hard to comment on a program. You know this, Earl. You've been here. You're almost at every practice, or you're at a bunch of practices. So you witness what goes on here, but you really don't know unless you're there. And, obviously, Coach Izzo's good friends with Coach Weber, and we certainly hope that they finish strong and are able to make the NCAA tournament, not just for them, but for the Big Ten. It's good for the Big Ten. But I think with me, we're just battling out here at MSU and trying to make sure our guys are ready to go. And, you know, minute we've got Minnesota up next, and then we've got Nebraska followed by at Indiana and against Ohio State to finish off Day-Day's Michigan State home career. So, you know, it's hard to speak on another situation. I'll leave that for Coach Izzo. He seems to be good at it. I would end up putting my foot in my mouth.
Hey, now, for you, how have you felt about this is your first year? How have you felt going through this? And have you really learned anything differently or maybe some new wrinkles that you had from when you were a head coach?
Well, I think, we're constantly trying to improve ourselves every day, and it's no different with me. I think having the opportunity to serve in a program under a coach in Coach Izzo that's, you know, been through the wars, won a national championship, probably should have, he's got countless Big Ten championships, not countless, but he's got quite a few. He won a lot of big games. Let's put it that way, Earl. And I think, you know, every day I'm trying to learn something new. And I think a bigger part is you learn a lot from your kids, and you don't even really realize it. So that's certainly something where I've been able to grow, too, is obviously learning from this coaching staff, but learning a lot from our guys as well.
Okay. Got a caller for you. Let's go to Jerry out in Haslett. Jerry, how you doing?
Pretty good, Earl. Coach Fife, I want to congratulate you on not only regarding your your sizable contribution to the season so far, but sometimes it's nice to kind of get fresh faces in the program, and it shares small indications that the team is kind of peaking right now. I do have a question defensively. It seems like through the years, and particularly this year, it seems like we really have trouble defensively shutting off the guard penetration, and yet the adjustments we make at halftime seem to take care of that. I'm wondering, it seems to be kind of a pattern, at least as an observer and a longtime observer of the program, that the question of our guys just not locking down early enough, or our help defense is just a little slow and we have trouble adjusting and tend to make those adjustments later, or what seems to be the issue there? Because it seems to be kind of it seems to repeat itself against certain teams, particularly yesterday.
Well, Jerry, that's a great question. And it's funny that you mentioned that. I started laughing because we talked about that this morning in our meeting. And I think it's three fronts. The first one is our pickup point. We've got to pick up the ball a little higher to start out once the ball is crossed half court. That's one thing we've talked about. The second issue is we've got to have people in help. We call it the gaps. We've got to have people in the gaps, off their man, in the gap, into the driving lanes. And then the third thing you said is our help rotations. We've got to be able to rotate quicker. And I think part of that is we've got to make sure guys are down and ready to react. And that's a great point, and that's something we're certainly, especially against Minnesota, is we've got to prevent penetration. It's one of the main keys in victory is against Minnesota is they drive the ball. They drive it. So we've got to be ready on all those fronts that I mentioned, and that's something that we're certainly very, very aware of and have to do a better job.
Dane, I know most of us are surprised at how well this team is doing because it's still a very young team, and yet they've had such a strong season. Are you at all surprised, or what do you see is the key to this team playing so well for such a young team?
Well, I think the first thing is the culture that obviously Coach Izzo and his staff before I got here, before I arrived here, the culture they've created. But I think a big part is, and Coach mentions this all the time, is the leadership among the troops, the players, Draymond Green and Austin Thornton, have just done an unbelievable job of making sure everybody is both feet in. And that's the key, is making sure everybody from 1 to 16 are both feet in, understanding what we're doing to, what we're trying to do. The big goal is to win basketball games and, act right socially and take care of academics. And we've got people that truly understand that. And that's seniors. That's what seniors are supposed to do. When Derek Nix is a senior, when Keith Appling's a senior, when Adrian Payne's a senior, when Alex Gaughan is a senior, we'll expect them to do the same things. It doesn't have to come from seniors, but that's typically what happens is you have that type of leadership.
And the other thing is, what's been so surprising, especially, I've been here all these years and last summer, I just seem to notice that the chemistry on this team is so much better than on previous teams. What do you contribute that to Day-Day and Austin and Thornton for helping promote such a, we have really seem to have a very good chemistry with this team?
Well, I do, and I think, start of the year, Coach, set some standards that we weren't going to relent. We were going to stick to what we believe in, and I don't know what happened in years past. I just know what was set, the standard that was set here when I arrived was, the culture that had been created. Day-Day and Austin are a big part of that, but you know what? I think we had some guys that, the maturity aspect. We got to keep in mind that these kids are 18 to 22, and we all know how old we were. How we tended to occasionally act when we were that age. So I think it's just the big part of growing up and We've got guys, like I said, that are both feet in, and it's obviously showing out on the floor.
When you came into the program, what did you really notice about, wow, this is really different? Maybe you just didn't expect it, or you just didn't. I know you had an idea. You've been around here enough times. But did anything catch you that surprised you when you first got into the program?
Yeah, you know, on the peripheral, we always heard about the Michigan State atmosphere. You know, an outsider, we've always heard about it. Everybody preaches family, family, family. We're a team. We're a family. At Michigan State, it's demanded. If you're not spending time with teammates, you better start thinking about it. And I think that is a crucial part of this experience at Michigan State, and a huge component as to why this program continues to have success year in and year out. And it's tough. I mean, it's hard work, Earl, to be able to be put in these positions. It doesn't just happen. It's hard work for these kids. It's hard work for the staff and everybody that goes into this everybody that touches this program. It's hard work, but I think a big part is the type of understanding that this is a legitimate family, and we're to help and rely on each other to have success.
Well, before I let you go, let's talk about that Minnesota game coming up. You know, Minnesota, they've had a good season. Of course, they lost their big gun, and this has hurt them, but they've learned to compensate in other ways. And as we mentioned a little bit before, they've got some very good guard play, and this now is basically like a 3 or 4 guard team, isn't it?
Well, they play 10 guys.
Yeah.
Earl. I think that causes problems in itself. It's tough to scout. But I think if you look at Minnesota's games in the Big Ten, they're in every single game. And extremely dangerous, fully capable of being 9-5. I think they continue to get better. They mix defenses. They're big. They're strong. They're athletic. But they're young. And I think that's, you know, why they are where they are. They're young. And obviously that injury to Mbekwe obviously set them back, but a very good basketball team. They caused us several problems at our place at home. It's going to be a tough game. You know, we're going to the Barn. The Barn is a very tough place to play. I never won there in college. They've had some success there in years. Michigan State has had success there in years past, but you know, life on the road in the Big Ten is very, very difficult. And I think a big key is, you know, we talked about this whole interview is the leadership among the troops and making sure that, you know, within the ranks, those guys making sure, holding each other accountable, that they're ready. We're going to try to do our part as much as we can as coaches. But I think, you know, Draymond Green, Austin Thornton, our upperclassmen need to help these guys understand that Minnesota's fighting for their lives, and we're fighting for, you know, essentially ours if we want to win a championship. So those things we've got to make sure we take care of business as far as being ready to play.
Okay. Hey, Dana, I want to thank you. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I know I'll see you over at the next practice there, and we'll talk a little bit more.
Okay, Earl. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dane. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Dane Fife, Michigan State assistant coach, right here on AM 870 WKAR. 39 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Many see poverty, drugs, gangs, and violence on Indian reservations and wonder what's been lost. Ojibwe David Troyer sees beauty, too, and told Speaking of Faith that he focuses on what his people saved, their language, for one.
It's a chance to define ourselves on and in our own terms.
I'm Neil Cohn, and David Troyer's Res Life, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The high today, 39 degrees and mostly sunny, mostly cloudy tonight and windy with a low in the upper 20s. Tomorrow's high, 42, windy and rain and snow are likely Tuesday. Partly sunny Wednesday with a slight chance of rain and snow and a high in the low 40s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.com. talksports.org. So just give us a call or send us an email. Talk Sports with us right here on WKAR in East Lansing. I'm Earl Robinson. We'll be with you until 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. We've got Sean Windsor on the line with us. Sean Windsor writes for the Detroit Free Press. So let's bring in Sean. Sean, how you doing?
Doing fine. How you doing?
Okay.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Well, it looks like we have your compatriot here, your combatant foe here, Joe Rexroad, is with us. So we've got both of you on the lines now.
That's a lot of good at work for us in one show, Earl.
Well, we figured we'd give it a try today. We were able to get the lines together, so it's good having you both on. Well, let me get your opinions on yesterday's game.
Go ahead,
Sean. Go ahead. Old age first.
Earl, I thought in some ways it was as impressive a performance as they've had all year in the second half. They did what championship teams do. They weathered an adrenaline rush from Purdue, which you kind of knew was going to be the case. They were out without a couple of their players, and then Draymond Green took over the game and was a facilitator, scorer. And helped Brandon Dawson have, I thought, his best game of the season.
Yep, by Joe.
I thought in the first half, defensively, they were a step slow on a lot of things. They were, they just weren't doing some of the things they had been doing. And you have to give Purdue credit. Those guys really came out emotional. I thought Lewis Jackson was as fast as I've seen him in a long time, and he got by Epling a few times, and Hummel was great driving Draymond Green, but... they got right back to that defense, and there were a lot of good individual performances. Sean mentioned Austin Thornton. You could say that's his best game or one of them, certainly his career scoring half. But I think just the team defense, again, is the thing that this team can pretty much rely on at this point. And it was, Purdue misses 22 of its first 23 shots. Yeah, they had a few good looks in there and just missed them, but they had a lot of bad looks in there, too. And I just think Michigan State's defense right now, when it wants to really clamp down on people, it can do it better than I've seen an Izzo team in a long time.
Yes, I'll agree. I think that defensive effort was especially tough yesterday. Now, I was really impressed with the first half, maybe because Purdue played so well. And maybe, but how much would you say, Sean, how much would that more Purdue's play as opposed to Michigan State not playing that well?
Well, Joe makes a good point that we're a step slow defensively. Particularly, Purdue was using pin down screens, screening down on the low block for Hummel or Smith to then come up to the top of the key, and the defenders, and it was a lot of cases, it was Draymond Green, were trailing maybe a step and a half to two steps behind as opposed to a step behind. So when they'd come around the top screen, there was a gap there, and then they were pulling up for open, uncontested jumpers. That's where. You could say that it was Michigan State's fault. On the other hand, Purdue's got to make those shots, and they were making those shots. To me, what was sort of overlooked in all of this is that Derek Nix scored, I think, 10 points in the first half on his assortment of low-post moves, and they stayed with him. In other words, Purdue had shot almost 50% from the floor, scored, I think, 38 points, maybe it was 36, and yet they were only up by three, and that was in large part because of the way Nix played down in the block, and years past, maybe you get an effort like that on the road, and you're down by 10 or 12 at half, and it's a much harder comeback in the second half.
Yes, Joe, especially with Nix, I've been impressed with him this year and last year. He has really come a long way, hasn't he?
Oh, there's no question, and he's one of just so many things about this team that we wondered about in the offseason that were, really big question marks. And, again, most of them have been answered the way Michigan State wanted them to be answered. And Nix is right high on that list. I'm impressed, too. Like Sean said, they go to him. They just kept feeding him. Just here, stop it. And he got into a rhythm. And that was an important stretch, for him to give them those points. And, he's kept the weight off pretty well. He just seems even a lot better to me on defense. They're better when he's in there defensively. Even though Adrian Payne is more athletic, Adrian Payne can come out of nowhere and block a shot. But Nix, I thought, really did a good job, with the ball screens in the second half and just, cutting off drives, things like that yesterday. He's just all around. And, again, if you project that guy, if he can drop another 10, 12 pounds, cut another few percentage points off the body fat,
Yeah, he could be really dynamite as a senior.
Yeah, we might see that because, you know, I could see you're right because he looks like he could certainly, you know, he's got room to lose that 10 to 12 pounds. So if he does, then we really might have something special next year.
Yeah, I mean, he's, he's more athletic than you realize. Great feet, great hands. And, you think back to a year ago and all the different things that have changed. I mean, you know, a year ago, Izzo has said it. He almost totally gave up on Knicks. And even, you know, Knicks kind of got it together and gave him some good games here and there. And then at the end of the year, they were going to play UCLA and Josh Smith, and it was going to be a big showdown. And Knicks played like 3 minutes, you know. And there was no indication that he would be able to do what he has done this season.
Hey, yeah, let me ask you both. Sean, you can start out first. Why is the chemistry on this team so good? I mean, Joe and I have talked about this during the year. It seems for some reason the chemistry really developed well on this team, and it's responded to Tom or Day-Day's leadership, but the chemistry on this team is really special.
Well, it is special. It's palpable. I think Joe would agree that we've seen it essentially from practices before the season even started. You know, you don't want to get in too much to last year. It's just a different group of personalities. I think the players on last year's team were fine. They just maybe didn't mesh as well. I think the real thing about this year is that you have a dynamic personality in Draymond Green and a bunch of young guys and or new guys that are willing to listen to him and willing to follow him. And Draymond has made some adjustments too. He and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about something that he had to learn to do in the huddles, for example, during timeouts, where he will literally tell his teammates, maybe after he's snapped at him or gotten on him on the floor for missing an assignment or something, in the huddle, he will start out by saying, "This is a mistake that I made. This was my bad," and then get back into what he was talking to them about. So he takes accountability for what he's not doing well. And you know how that goes? That goes a long way. I mean, think about it as a parent. Sometimes you do that with your child. You say, "Well, I remember I made the same kind of mistake too when I was your age, and this is how I had to figure it out." That gives you some credibility, and that just wasn't there last year for whatever reason. That dynamic, it just didn't work. But it is this year, and I think that's really what it starts with: is Green, and then the group that follows him.
Yeah, Joe, what's your take on this going on the improved? That we see that they've had the proved chemistry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Sean said it perfectly there, and I think the three key words: willing to follow. And there's no question, Draymond Green had to adjust some things. I think he was a little bit more of an easily frustrated guy, maybe finger pointing sometimes. Now, look, I mean, he has wanted to be a great leader from day one, and he has been very vocal from day one, but there were older guys, and Lucas and Summers weren't natural leaders, but weren't necessarily comfortable saying, "Let's all follow Day-Day." And so you had to have the right mix, and like Sean said, it's a younger team. But I'm still impressed with what he's done to adjust. I think even practicing harder has been part of it. Like Sean said, taking more blame. But he's just, to me, he's just matured so much. And he's always been a guy we've liked talking to. He's always been a guy we were impressed with. You know, he loves basketball, he loves the past players. I mean, you're always impressed with Draymond Green, but he's figured out a way to get guys to rally around him and want to play for him, and that's where it all starts. And then I think Austin Thornton deserves a little more credit too than he gets sometimes, because
yes,
he is that kind of that good cop guy, quietly gonna take a guy aside and talk to him, and hey, the guy's been through a lot. He's a fifth year senior, and now he's playing his best basketball. So you really do have two leaders, and these guys just seem to get along and like each other. And like Izzo said today at his roundtable, it's a lot more common the other way. It's rare to have teams like this. It's not like everyone has this team and then you eat a few bad apples. Most teams don't have that great chemistry. And that's something he's always emphasized. And I think it's one of the keys to what he's been able to do at Michigan State. And he's talking like this team is right up there with anyone he's had. And I think you're seeing it on the court.
Now, Joe, Sean has told me that, sometimes you guys have some pretty good debates. So what's one of the things that you guys can debate for us on the air?
Ooh, Sean, go ahead, Sean. If you've got some, if you got a bone to pick, here's your chance on the air.
Well, I guess when I meant, Earl, when I say debate, I really say more of like a spirited conversation. Because Joe and I are both kind of basketball junkies in a way, and maybe just frustrated players, I guess. With bad knees, bad shoulders, and broken fingers. And
well, we had a pretty good one today, actually, and Earl, you certainly can win. You know, we were talking, Izzo, again, interesting conversation today. We were kind of pressing him on, you know, where this team ranks with some of his great teams. I mean, it's gotten to the point where that discussion's out there. ESPN just did a thing that said this is his best team in terms of the numbers since, you know, the Cleaves era, or since the 2001 team anyway, with Randolph Richardson. So, you know, we were talking to Izzo today about, you know, how's this team ranking, and he still said, you know, not in the upper echelon of talent, though I think – He's not saying it's an untalented team, but maybe not quite as good. But Sean and I were debating the 0405 team, which I do think is more talented than this team. Not by a lot, but more talented. I think this team defends much better than that team did, and that's the big difference. But that was the Final Four team with, you know, Brownager, Anderson, Davis, Torbert Hill, yeah. Neitzel as a freshman. So I think that team was more talented. Sean maybe was a little questionable.
Well, I love that team in terms of its talent. It was a very good team, but I don't think that team had the dynamic presence of Draymond Green, who has become such a – and people write him off sometimes is because he's not the quickest guy or he's such a good leader, he's kind of a character guy. But he can shoot from three. He's got as perfect a rotation as you can want. He puts the ball on the floor. He's got great sort of hesitation moves. He's got a baseline fadeaway that is an NBA shot. And so I'm not sure that 0506 team, first of all, had a player quite like Green. Secondly, I would agree with Joe that maybe the seven or eight guys on that team maybe had more talent than the seven or eight guys on this year's team. But if Thornton keeps shooting the way he does and Wood can come back and hit a couple of jumpers and Apley keeps making that mid-range jumper like we saw yesterday, I think that the 2005-2006 had more promise or more talent on the perimeter, but I think that the front court of this year's team makes up for that more than the perimeter strength of that team makes up for the lack of strength. I know they had Paul Davis, but Green and Dawson and Appling and Nix, as Izzo told me today after the press conference, are all potential pros. Now, whether they get there or not, whether they do anything there or not, who knows? But Dawson gets a jump shot, and he'll be a Richardson Randolph type guy. And that 0-5-6 team didn't have anybody like that. So that's kind of what Joe and I were talking about. I mean, it's fun to debate. Maybe Joe's right in terms of depth of talent, but I think that the best couple of players on this year's team are maybe better than the best couple of players on that year's team.
Well, let me ask you this, guys, because we've all debated this one. How good is Draymond Green's chances of making it to the next level? We've all talked about this from time to time.
Well, first of all, I got to get my last shot in. Allen Anderson, way underrated as an overall player. He was the best player on that team, and Paul Davis also, I think, is underrated. But, you know, good points. I mean, you know, Brown, Ager, Torbert, they come in waves at you offensively. Like, I don't think this team can quite do. But, again, I agree that they didn't have someone who could command things the way Green is right now. I mean, Green really, to me, just sort of controlled that game yesterday in the second half, which not many guys can do, especially from the four spot, but he's kind of like a point power forward, you know?
Yeah.
But as far as those, so right on that, I think he's got a chance in the NBA, and I think Sean and I agree on this. You know, like you said, he's got that he's worked on that fadeaway. He's working on, you know, he watches guys, Nowitzki, these guys, and he's working on different shots. He's improved so much in that way. I think everyone says he can't guard a three, and I agree. He's going to have a hard time in the NBA guarding these perimeter guys. I think he can guard a four, though. I think he can go in there and wall off a 6'9" guy and make that guy shoot over him. Draymond Green's an outstanding post defender. I mean, great post defender. He's just 6'6". So, yeah, guys can shoot over him, but I think he can go in there as a four and do that and then be a real mismatch problem the other way. And he's just a guy, he's going to impress the heck out of everyone. And I know that's not what it's all about. It's about talent and producing. But I think he's going to impress the heck out of everyone with his intangibles. And he just improved so much. I certainly wouldn't count him out from playing in the NBA.
Yes, I would. Go ahead.
I'd like to answer that. But again, I want to make my quick counterpoint. Joe's completely right. Davis was underrated. Allen Anderson was maybe the best all-around player on that team. But I think defense is a talent, too. And this team has two on-ball defenders that were better than anybody on that team, Keith Appling and Brandon Dawson. And that, so you combine the dynamic play with Green and the low post play with Nixon in Payne, with a lockdown defense right now. And to me, that's a talent. It just gets overlooked because somebody can't do a crossover and pull up from 35 feet. Not that the 05-06 team had anybody that could do that. The one guy that had the leaping ability couldn't shoot. The one that could shoot couldn't put it on the floor. So, but in any case, I'm with Joe. Green has got a thirst to learn and to get better that I think will serve him well in the NBA. And one thing Joe didn't mention, he's talking about his great post defense. It's absolutely true. Part of the reason is because he's got a wingspan that reaches 7'2". He's got exceedingly long arms in relation to his 6'6 range, and that will serve him well, too.
Now, you know, guys, to get to the NBA, you need to do one thing exceptionally well. Either you're a good rebounder, you're a good scorer, or you're a good assist man, but you need really one outstanding part of your game. Does Draymond have that one outstanding game, or is he just, as we've said, we've all been saying, he's just a good all-around player, but does he need to have that one outstanding skill?
Well, I mean, he might be end up Michigan State's all-time leading rebounder. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, he's... And the wingspan is a big part of that. I think his sense for the ball, his strength, his ability to go get it, even though he's not an exceptional athlete, I think that's an elite skill of his, rebounding the basketball. He's good, like you said, he's good at a lot of other things. But, he may get to 1,000 this week, I believe, and, of course, 1,092 is the record. Talking about a 6'6 guy with not outstanding vertical, you know, doing that. So, he has, I think, an amazing nose for the ball and instinct for doing that, and I think that will be a big selling point for him.
Okay.
Earl, I would second Joe. And as a matter of fact, in all the games, I can't remember off the top of my head, I don't know how many games they played this year. I'm not much of a mathematician. But not once have I thought or seen a game where he was not the best rebounder on the floor. Mm-hmm. Both teams, including North Carolina. I mean, Joe's right. He's a vacuum cleaner. And he knows where to go. He's a lot like Rodman. He doesn't have quite that fast switch, second leaping ability like actually Dawson does. But right now he's a better rebounder than Dawson because he's kind of a, as Tom likes to say, a range rebounder. He's just kind of got a sense of angles and where it's going to carry him off to.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for both being with me. I mean, certainly been a pleasure. This was like a first time we tried to get the two guys on, and it worked out quite well. So thank you both for being with me today. And hey, I might have to have you both on again, or maybe you'll be on both separately the next time.
All right. Well, thanks, Earl. And, Sean, I'm going to call you and start badgering you right away because I'm not done arguing with you. No, thanks, Earl.
This argument will go on probably through the tournament. So
exactly.
Thanks for having me on, Earl. It was a pleasure.
Okay, thanks, Sean, and thanks, Joe. We'll see you both later, guys. Bye-bye. That's Sean Windsor from the Detroit Free Press, and then Joe Rexroad from the Lansing State Journal, both on with us, and both do a great job of covering Michigan State basketball and just covering basketball in general. I want to thank them for being on. And so, boy, we end up having a very good show today with everyone and all our guests on, and had Dane Fife on, had Dean and Dean Look on. So, yes, been a great show for all of you sports fans. Come back, though. We want you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You know we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here in WKAR. And spread the word around. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell everyone you know. You can enjoy sports every single afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. So tomorrow's guest, we're going to talk with Tom Hugler. We're going to talk some hunting and fishing tomorrow that'll be on Wednesday. Tomorrow, we've got Mark Hollis, Michigan State's athletic director tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, we'll have Tom Hugler with us. So tomorrow, join in and tune us in for Michigan State athletic director Mark Hollis. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on WKAR. East Lansing, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock. So come back and join us tomorrow. We want you to have a safe and a pleasant evening, and join us again tomorrow right here on WKAR East Lansing. Have a safe and pleasant evening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.